The last time we spoke was just last year, just before the US election, and you were using the US election to study the Google's manipulation effect. So just to update us before we begin proper, what did you find? Did you find out anything interesting from the US election last year?
Well, there were some big surprises, which we weren't really at first aware of. It's only when we started digging into the data that we discovered these surprises. We found that the monitoring system forced Google to back off on some of its manipulations, which we were not expecting. So, for example, there was about from the time we started monitoring till the election, there was about a 20% decrease in political bias on Google search results, a 50% decrease in political bias on YouTube recommendations. That was shocking. And the biggest shock came just a few days before the election, because we noticed Google was doing exactly what we thought they'd be doing. And by the way, it's only with a monitoring system that you can see this. You have to have real-time monitoring. You have to be looking over the shoulders with their permission of registered voters. You have to be capturing the content they're seeing on their screens. And a few days before the election, sure enough, Google was sending out partisan go vote reminders nationwide. That means they were sending 50% more go vote reminders to Democrats than to Republicans, which is pretty outrageous. It's also, under American law, it's illegal, although, again, how would anyone know they're doing it unless they happen to have a nationwide monitoring system in place? So on the night of October 31st, just a few days before the election, we went public with that information. We let Google know, too, that we had that the data, we were collecting the data, which is court admissible data, and they stopped. So literally November 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, which was election day, they stopped. They stopped sending out these partisan go vote reminders, which meant, by the way, that they were holding back on sending millions of votes to Kamala Harris, who was Donald Trump's opponent. They literally held back on that most spectacular of their manipulations. They stopped because they had gotten caught.
So the good news is that if you do the work that you're doing, you can stop this, or at least rein in the effects of this manipulation.
Yes, well, we've seen that before on a smaller scale. We've gotten them to pull back a couple of times on some things with the help of some members of Congress, but this was a big one. This was really enormous, and the fact that 50% drop in bias on YouTube recommendations, that was pretty shocking as well. So, yeah, what we've learned here is that if you're monitoring on a large enough scale and you have court admissible data, this means you can get these companies to pull back, to stop their manipulations. Presumably, we could do the same thing in their campaign around the world to indoctrinate children, the actions they're taking to manipulate financial markets. Pretty much everything they're doing, in theory, we can capture it in any country in the world, and we can get them to stop.
But it also means that, you know, if we need these monitoring systems, it also means that there needs to be a lot more funding. At the moment, it's just you doing this, isn't it? There is nobody else doing the same work that you're doing.
That's right. And we've been struggling with funding to build the system. The first system we built in 2016 cost us just under $1 million. The altogether to finally scale up so that we have a nationwide system in place, which is still running, by the way, right now, 24 hours a day. In fact, we just passed 120 million personalized ephemeral experiences captured with this system. Normally, all that content is lost forever. There's no way to go back in time and capture that content. because it's ephemeral by definition. It's also personalized. It's literally, optimized to have a maximum impact on individuals. And of course, we are looking over the shoulders of real people and capturing real personalized ephemeral content. The point is, altogether, it cost us to get to where we are today about $8 million. And we're just kind of going day to day right now. We think we've proven the value of this system. We've proven that we know how to do it, know how to set them up, know how to analyze the data so quickly that if you go to our dashboard, which is at americasdigitalshield.com, that's Americas with an S, digitalshield.com, you'll see the data as the data are coming in. We've gotten so good at this that we can do a lot of analysis in real time. So you actually can see the manipulation, see the bias, and see when they stop. That's even more important. You can see when they stop. But we don't have the full funding that we need to make this system permanent and self-sustaining. And we don't have the funding to help other countries to set up similar systems. We've been approached now by 8 countries. But as far as I can tell so far, they don't have the money. And of course, we don't have the money to give them. So we're a little bit stuck. I think when people realize what we accomplished in 2024 with this big system, I think some light bulbs are going to start lighting up in people's heads. I think and again, when people realize that laws and regulations, if you can even pass such things, which in the US we cannot, but laws and regulations are pretty meaningless unless you have some way of measuring compliance. You're literally just trusting these companies to do these things you want them to do and to stop doing things you don't want them to do. You're trusting them.
You mentioned that. This is something that Google are talking about in internal emails. Why are they crossing over into the politics of the country? This is activist stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
Why is a company doing that?
Well, there's actually 2 issues here. One is, why have they done it for so long? They've been doing it very, very aggressively since around 2012. And we could say, okay, why did they start doing this? Why did they do it more and more aggressively? And I think the answer there is pretty straightforward, which is that they were founded by 2 utopians. And those utopians hired a lot of people, mainly from universities in the Northeast United States, who, like themselves, were liberals, and many of them also utopians, who had ideas in their heads about, we know better, we know better, we know how the world should be, and we're going to make the world in our image. And again, it sounds like I'm making that up. I'm not, because another leak from Google was a 8-minute film called The Selfish Ledger. Okay, it's an idiotic name, but the point is, it was never meant to be seen outside of the company. It was made by their advanced products division. I know the head of that division. And the film basically outlines the power that Google has to re-engineer humanity. According to, this is right in the film, according to Google's values. Google's values, that's a quote from the film. So that's how a lot of people at this company think. So you've got that. That's kind of the background, I think, on why they got more and more aggressive about controlling elections. But now we have a new issue that's come up, and just within the past few months, which is, why did Google back off on manipulating the current election, the 2024 election? Why did they back off when they're obviously so political, so partisan themselves? Why did they back off? Why did the CEO of Google, Sundar Pichai, why did he call up Trump a few weeks before the election and wish him luck. What you had is Google literally sucking up to Trump, which at first glance doesn't make sense. But you see, in August of last year, Google lost a big case, a big court case in the United States. This was the United States of America, Department of Justice versus Google. And in August, the judgment was made that Google is a monopoly. And since August, they've been in the penalty phase of the trial, which means that the government is trying to make up its mind what penalties they should levy against Google. And they could, quote unquote, break the company up. Now they can't break up the search engine, and Google knows that, and that's so they're safe as far as that goes. But they could get Google to sell off some of the companies that it's bought, like Chrome, a couple other things. It could get them to sell off some companies, and then the folks in our government, including Trump, would say, "Look, we broke up Google." See, so they'd be big heroes, but they're also we would do it in such a way that is good for Google. In other words, they're negotiating right now to come up with a kind of win-win outcome here, so that the government does something that makes it look very effective, and in fact, Google ends up better off than it was before, and even more powerful. That's why right now, the CEO of Google is making nice with Donald Trump. And by the way, Elon Musk benefits from this arrangement as well. So what on the surface looks like the government coming down on top of Google is not, that's not what's really happening at all. What's happening is there's a coordination is occurring, and it involves Musk's interests, financial interests, and regulatory interests, and it involves Trump getting a lot of credit for supposedly doing something amazing. And it involves money flowing into Trump and Trump's operations. Google donated $1 million to his inauguration. So it's a strange world. That's all I can say. Strange world, strange bedfellows.
After we spoke last time, I started thinking about this even deeper, and I started noticing other little things. Like, for instance, there's a school in the town where I live, and outside it has a sign proudly saying that it's a school sponsored by a big tech company. And then you realize that what they're doing is that tech company is providing laptops for the students. And so they're building profiles on those students. They're building those students into their infrastructure right from the beginning. And then I started thinking even further, and I started looking at how our government does deals with Google to have all of government services provided. So it's not just us as individuals they're building profiles on, and they're surveilling and they're manipulating. It's also our governments. This is a problem which goes far beyond just an individual level. This is a societal, civilization level problem, isn't it?
Yes, and it's creepier than you think. So that no matter how creepy you think it is, it's worse. So in the United States, I don't know if this is true worldwide, but in the U.S., Google provides all of its services to any educational system free of charge. So that means all of what's called G Suite, which is all the fancy Google stuff that businesses use, they provide it free of charge to our elementary schools, our high schools, our colleges. So even some of the top universities in the country, including the University of California, where I taught for many years, the whole University of California system, even UCLA, which is one of the top schools in the world, even UC Berkeley, they all use Google for everything, which means Google is monitoring every single thing they do. And there are top news organizations around the world, including The Guardian in the UK, including The New York Times, both of which have done investigative pieces on Google, which use G Suite. They're using all of Google's products and services, and every single thing they do is being shared with Google. Everything, all the investigations, all the attachments, everything is being shared with Google. And I know, because I'm in touch with people who work at Google and who are thinking of, you know, blowing the whistle, and they tend to contact me before they contact anyone else. And I know that the, inside the company, that's called EHV, extreme high value content. So that kind of content coming from really important places like the New York Times, that kind of content, it's screened by algorithms, but basically there are people who have eyeballs on that content all the time.
Okay, but this isn't just a surveillance thing. You've already mentioned it already about the ephemeral experiences. How do they manipulate people? And then the follow-up question to that is, are the things that we're seeing in the world, say, for instance, COVID or the BLM movement or the gender ideology movement, for instance, are these things being manipulated by these social media companies? Is this how they're happening? Because a lot of these things seem absolutely absurd to the normal, average, everyday person. Is this how they're happening?
Well, if you'd asked me that question 5 or 10 years ago, I could have speculated left and right. That's all I could have done, though, was just speculate. Now I don't have to speculate because we can go and look those things up in our massive database. It's terabytes of data. It's a tremendous amount of data. And we can look those things up and we can see what kind of content on those topics, what kind of content Google has been showing people when people are doing searches on those topics. And we can see whether that content is biased in some way. And all those topics that you just mentioned, as a matter of fact, we've looked them all up within the past few weeks. And they're showing people highly biased, left-leaning, progressive content. Now, when they want to show someone right-wing content, and you're probably thinking, well, when would they ever want to do that? I'm going to give you a great example in a minute here, which I think will shock you. When they want to show people right-wing content, they do it. They do whatever is in their interests, whatever their whims tell them to do. But on those topics you mentioned, they're sending people left-leaning content, which means that for people who are undecided, people who are trying to figure things out, you know, it means that Google is pushing by the millions, is pushing people in one direction. Now, I'm going to give you an example from our database where Google has been sending right-wing content. Why would they ever do that since they're left-wing? I'll tell you why, because one of our senators, Senator Elizabeth Warren, has gone on record calling for Google's breakup. She did this on record in writing a few years ago, and she keeps repeating it over and over again, even though Google, by the way, is one of her donors. She gets it. She understands how dangerous they are, the surveillance, the manipulation, the censorship. She gets it. And so she's gone on record. And so she was up for re-election this past November, and Google, if you look up to anything about Elizabeth Warren on Google, Google was sending highly biased conservative content regarding this liberal senator. She's a Democrat. And Google was overloading people with right-wing attack content, articles, and you name it, rumors and conspiracy theories, all of which were attached to this Elizabeth Warren's searches. Any kind of searches on her, you got from Google right-wing content because they were trying to make her lose the election. She won, but they were trying to get her out of office.
I've got to ask also, though, Robert, is this all inevitable? We're going through the information revolution. I mean, we've been going through it for the last 20 years, I suppose. But we're still in the early days of it. Is this inevitable, this war for our data, this war over our privacy? It can't be stopped, can it?
It can be mitigated, and that's what we're doing. I'm about to publish a 200-page monograph which summarizes all the work we've done over the past 12 years, and we have identified about a dozen new methods that the internet has made possible for manipulating people. And when you throw AI at these methods, they become more effective and more powerful. Is that going to stop? No, not entirely. But again, if we're capturing evidence, hard, cold, court admissible, scientifically valid evidence, that's going to give pause to these people. They are going to, here and there, they're going to pull back. You know, when they really are highly motivated to get something, maybe they won't pull back. But in general, they're going to have to be careful.
But then all we're doing is putting our fingers in the dam, and the leak is going to come out somewhere else, just like the little Dutch boy, isn't it? I mean, the only way to really stop this is a cultural change where they change their behavior or they change their ideals. And that's not really in our control.
Not exactly. let me explain why. Laws and regulations move very slowly, especially in the U.S. where there's so much partisanship. But monitoring is tech. We can move as fast as the tech companies move. And that's what we're doing now. So right now, we're monitoring AI. All of a sudden, we're monitoring intelligent personal assistants, IPA, like IPAs like Siri and Google Home. And we are, whatever it is that's out there that might be problematic, we're keeping up with it. And that's the thing about monitoring. It's good tech versus bad tech, and we can go as fast as they can go. So I think moving forward, there's an important place for monitoring in emerging technologies. Monitoring has to be part of that. Otherwise, we'll have no idea what's going on. Now, you're asking a bigger question too. You're saying, yeah, but isn't all this inevitable anyway? In other words, aren't they just going to be surveilling more and more? Aren't they going to be censoring more and more content? Aren't they going to be manipulating in more and more ways? Yeah. And is AI going to make all of this work better for them? And the answer is yeah. But if we don't monitor, it means we're completely blind to what's happening. If we're monitoring, at least we know what's happening. We're basically creating a very significant degree of transparency. And we're creating a record. We are creating a paper trail. We're creating a massive record of evidence. How that evidence gets used, that's going to depend on the country and who's in charge and what their motives are. But the difference between collecting the data, which is what we've gotten so good at, and not collecting the data, that's night and day. That means that the whole world is just sleepwalking into a new kind of totalitarianism with these tech moguls in charge. As long as you're monitoring, you're awake.
It's crazy, Robert, because, you know, especially over the past few years with all our experiences with COVID, for instance, you know, a lot of us went back and reread 1984, and we all thought, oh, how terrible this is. He had a computer screen. He had a TV screen on his wall of his room, and that was watching them all day, every day. But actually, we've got it worse than that, because we have that screen in our pockets. We voluntarily carry it with us.
Oh, it's so bad. Unfortunately, I know more about surveillance than probably anyone in the world, and it's so bad that I'm talking in front of a big group, sometimes I don't even want to tell them because they get very upset. People get upset. For example, you're old enough to know to remember, because it was just a few years ago when you could pull the battery out of your phone. You remember that, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yes, I do.
It wasn't 20 years ago. It was just a few years ago. And now all the batteries are soldered in. Now, why are they soldered in? They're soldered in so that you can't turn your phone off. So that even when you turn your phone off, and by the way, you can test this out if you don't believe me. is just let your phone sit there for a week or two. When it's off, it's draining the battery because it's listening. It has not stopped surveillance. The surveillance keeps going on. And it means also when you're roaming around with it, it's still tracking your location. Even if you turn off your location tracking, it's still tracking your location. And all these apps that you keep installing, these apps, the reason why everyone's pressuring you to install apps of every sort is because those apps are collecting massive amounts of data. They're not just doing what they're supposed to be doing. They're also just collecting massive amounts of data on your phone, which then can be monetized. That's what's going on.
It seems to me, Robert, that the only way to solve this problem is, number one, to break up the big tech companies in some way, and number two, to get government support for the likes of your monitoring system. Is that what we need to do?
Monitoring absolutely has to be done worldwide, whether it's my system or other people's systems. It has to be done worldwide, and I don't think we should trust governments to do it. I think there should be entities that are nonprofit, nonpartisan. You know, we're going to have to go country by country and figure out how best to do it. So monitoring, absolutely. Regarding breakup, that's a little bit complicated because you can't break up Google's search engine, and they know it. And that's why they actually pushed the United States government into going after them using antitrust law, which applies to monopolies. And that's what's actually happened here, is the government's gone after them using antitrust law. And that's not going to hurt Google at all, because the government can't break up the search engine because it won't work. It's just like with Facebook. Facebook knows no government can break up Facebook's social media platform, because that would be like taking the Berlin Wall and putting it through the middle of, millions or billions of houses. You can't break up their social media platform. So breakup is kind of tricky. And so you really have to look carefully at each of these crazy entities and figure out, okay, what can be done here? Now, the day before I first testified before the U.S. Congress, I published an article in Bloomberg Business Week. And this article, which they loved at Bloomberg, and then it got at the last minute killed by some high up publisher guy, and then the editor in chief fought for it. It was back and forth, and they finally published it the day before I testified before Congress. And there I actually explain, if you go to Epstein in Business Week.com, you'll come right to it. Epsteininbusinessweek.com. You'll see the one and only solution that will work taking care of the Google threat, and that is to declare the index, which is the big database they use to generate search results, to declare it to be a public commons. And this is what governments do around the world. This is what governments do over and over again. They've done it for hundreds of years. Whenever any service or any commodity becomes essential, like water, like gasoline, like telephone services, the government eventually has to sweep in. They have to do it. The electric companies all were first private. The government had to come in and say, no, we're going to regulate you because this is essential now. We have to protect the public, the interests of the public. So there's precedent. There is precedent for doing something like this. Declare Google's index to be a public commons, which means they're forced to share it. And if they share it, they won't go out of business, but lots and lots and lots of other companies will set up competing search engines. And even high school students will set up competing search engines. And they'll all be focusing on different niche markets, Lithuanians and women and you name it. And the world of search will look like the world of news media, where there's thousands of entities all competing with each other. And that's the way it should be. That will take away that threat. So you have to kind of go threat by threat. And yes, there are things we can do that will offer us some level of protection. Meanwhile, the tech companies will find new ways to control the world or whatever it is they want to do, re-engineer humanity. But, you know, we can stay on top of it. There are smart people outside these tech companies too. And we can stay on top of it if we put in the effort. And of course, if we can get the resources, there are ways we can protect ourselves. Can I mention one quick link here? Because what I want you to do is I want you to send people to myprivacytips.com. Myprivacytips.com. That it takes you to an article that I publish and that I update from time to time, which begins as follows. I have not received a targeted ad on my mobile phone or computer since 2014. That's me writing. And that's the truth. And the fact is that my phone here is not like your phone. My phone is a secure phone. No one can track my location on this phone. No one can listen to me on this phone. This is a secure phone. So what in this article, I explain to people how you can text securely, how you can email securely, how you can basically use all the services that you care about, but do it in such a way that you're not being surveilled. So it's myprivacytips.com. So start there. Start with you and your family. Start by protecting yourself. And then, of course, we can deal with these bigger issues. But we've got to start by protecting ourselves, making ourselves aware of what's going on and what the alternatives are. There are alternatives.
I know we've run out of time now, Robert, but I'd like to ask you one last question. I feel that this is the biggest story of our time. Is that the way you feel about it?
You know, I didn't at first, but I've been doing this for a long time now, and we keep making new discoveries, including literally just a week ago. And because these discoveries are showing over and over and over again that this is crazy. The things we're discovering about, you know, the power that these companies have to manipulate. And of course, the evidence we're collecting showing that they really are using these techniques. I basically have become just overwhelmed by this. In other words, I not only think this is the most important issue of our time, and it's going to get much more important as they incorporate AI into all of these tools that they use, but I think this is the scariest issue that there is. It's not just important, it's really frightening. And the more I have learned about it, the more frightened I have become and concerned about my own safety, the safety of my family, my staff. And there have been 6 violent incidents involving me, my close family, and my highest level staff since I first testified before Congress in 2019. We're now up to 6 violent incidents. So, This is scary, important stuff. Yes.
Look, Robert, we have run out of time, but I want to say thank you very much for joining us today. And thank you very much for your work. We really appreciate it.
I appreciate what you're doing. And, you know, the I don't know, the depth, the quality of your questions is fabulous. So just keep doing what you're doing and try to get the word out as best you can. Thank you for having me on.